Tim Legler, yes, legs, Legalicious, our NBA analyst, joins us in studio, giving us a straight talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. Okay, you know how this works, Tim. We have a game played, and we have these wild reactions that we extrapolate not from game one through whatever, how many games will go in this series, and sometimes we need to just say, whoa, whoa, whoa. To me, I look at what happened in game one, and I sum it up this way. It was the first ever NBA Finals game outside the U.S., first one for Toronto. They had 29 Jurassic Parks set up all over the city. The city was at a fever pitch. The team played very well, feeding off that pitch. And the Golden State Warriors, who were in their fifth straight final, have waited, you know, 74 days in between games, looked a little flat.
They did. And I think, you know, going into any game, there's a list of 6 to 8 things that are basically going to define the game. And
right.
I honestly think Toronto checked off every box. They outplayed Golden State,
no question,
in every facet of the game. So, you know, you don't necessarily expect to see that. I did expect Golden State to take some time to find the rhythm offensively. They never really got into it. They didn't hit you with those runs or barrages of shot making. In fact, the one time that they made it close in the third quarter really was at the foul line. And there's a big difference between watching Steph Curry go to the line and making 6 free throws over a 4 to 5 minute stretch and a couple of other guys thrown in there, as opposed to those guys getting loose on you and hitting you with like 3 threes in a 2 minute stretch. Even though it might be the same point total, the way they went about it and got to it to make that a close game in the third quarter felt differently. And as I was watching the game, I was like, okay, it got tight, but not in the way we expected. And Toronto's okay. They're going to weather the storm, because you could just see they were quicker. They were more aggressive. They moved the ball better. Golden State, I think the layoff definitely affected them. You don't use it as an excuse, but it's a legit thing. When you come into a game after having that long of a layoff, you can't replicate what that feels like in practice or walkthrough or watching film. You have to get out there and execute. And when you haven't done it in 10 days, that's what you get. So, yeah, you're not going to overreact to it, but give the Raptors credit, because they absolutely looked like from the very beginning of the game, they believe not only they're going to win the game, they're going to win the series. That's how they conducted themselves last night.
Yeah, Tim Legler with us in studio on Golic and Wingo. I think that was it. Golden State, they were close the entire game. It just looked choppy. Like you said, there's not that usual just waterfall of offense from them in this one. And I feel like a lot of that, not only Toronto playing very well defensively, but it seemed like they were very physical with them, kind of reminiscent of the Houston series for Golden State.
And it reminded me, honestly, a lot of the Cleveland series the year Cleveland beat Golden State. You know, we focus so much on Draymond Green getting suspended, and that's all you think about. Well, that's why they lost the series. No, that's not. That's only one game. They actually turned the series because they started to really get physical with Steph Curry out on the floor on his ball screen offense. They were getting away with it, you know, bumping him, holding him by the waist as he was trying to get free and get space. Every game is going to be officiated a little bit differently. I thought last night Toronto was phenomenal with their commitment to being up all over the floor and chasing them off the line, not giving him space coming off, you know, but he gets a couple easy ones at the top of the key just because the big guy was lazy on that play, or he wasn't concentrating on that play. So their commitment to their game plan was phenomenal. The other way that Golden State hurts you, unlike any other team, they make you play throughout the entire 24 seconds. And so even when you get down to 6-7 seconds on the clock, it's amazing how much more basketball is still to come when you play that team. Another dribble handoff, another down screen, Curry running from one side of the floor to the other, which leads to a three or a slip for the screener for a dunk. Like, these are the kind of plays they kill you with, because it's really difficult. It's not human nature to play defense for 24 seconds on your toes like that, concentrating. Give Toronto credit. They did it, at least for the first game. They absolutely did it on that end of the floor, and Golden State just never really found their rhythm.
We're talking to ESPN NBA analyst in studio, Tim Legler, on Golic and Wingo. So what we're trying to do now is figure out how this plays forward. What did you see in game one that you think will continue to play through the rest of the series that surprised you?
I think for me, the biggest thing that I think surprised me, and it's going to have to change, and you saw several guys associated with Golden State Warriors mentioned this after the game, the surge that the Raptors played with up the floor, the pace, even after made baskets. You don't typically see Golden State get the ball run back down their throat when they've just scored. There was so many score after score opportunities last night for the Toronto Raptors. It looked like, you know, the two teams were reversed, because that's what Golden State did to Portland in the last round. Draymond Green, every time they turned around, was coming up their back with a live dribble, drawing guys into the lane, or he was getting to the rim. That's what Toronto did. And Siakam played sort of that role that Draymond did, getting that initial push up the floor. They were taking advantage of a team that was getting back in sort of a jogging-type mode, and they weren't really communicating very well who had who. It led to some confusion in the open floor. I don't know if that was something that Nick Nurse talked about with them, that they saw that Golden State was susceptible to that, or it just sort of played out that way because they had so much energy at the start. But Golden State, to me, that's about as bad as they can play in transition defense. That's, to me, at the top of the list of things that they need to change. You can't give them 24 fast break points. By the way, I don't think they know how to chart fast break points. Right. I never have for years. I never understand it because I take notes during games of this importance, and I know what I'm coming up with. They don't understand that secondary early offense, to me, should count as transition offense. You know, it doesn't have to be necessarily right up the floor for a layup dunk or a one pass ahead three. Sometimes that's the initial push, and then there's somebody trailing into a play after Golden State gets their five guys back. Should also count as transition. So the 24, to me, doesn't do justice what Toronto actually did to them in early offense last night.
Tim Legler with us here in studio. And that feels not even like an adjustment, because we heard from Doris Burke and others during the game that Steve Kerr was pissed on the sideline because this is something they had talked about going into this game. This was a coaching point going into it. So is that an effort thing? Is that a focus thing? What is that for Golden State?
Yeah, he said it even at the end of the first quarter interview. So he was already seeing he didn't like what that looked like. They gave up a couple open threes early when no one rotated to Gasol. He said that was a mistake. He didn't like the fact that they were a little bit late in transition. And I did a touch screen on it last night, and I only picked two plays. I probably could have taken six or seven. It was more guys getting back but not talking out.
Right.
Who's stopping ball? Who's flaring out to the shooter? Like, who's going to run to the rim? I thought they had some serious mistakes with guys running back and then just sort of doing something randomly on their own in terms of running toward the ball, and now you create a lot of confusion. Who has ball? Who stays? Who's got this corner shooter? I saw a lot of that on the part of the Golden State Warriors, and again, to me, that points directly to the layoff.
Right.
Because you're not simulating transition defense and your days off before the NBA Finals. You're just not. You're not having those kinds. You're not like you're having live scrimmages against some team in the NBA. You call them up and say, hey, you guys want to work out with us?
Yeah.
We're getting ready to play in the finals. You're kind of walking through it, and you're looking at it on film. Once you get out there and feel what that feels like, you're going to see a big-time adjustment out of the Golden State Warriors. And I think, for me, it's going to start with Draymond Green.
Yeah, that's why a lot of this looks to me, when I see what happened in game one, eminently fixable. Yeah. For the Golden State Warriors. But you mentioned Draymond. Obviously, Pascal Siakam went nuts, 14 to 17 shooting, 32 points. A lot of that was transition buckets. A lot of that was him being open on the wing. And Draymond Green took ownership of that after the game. Here's what he had to say.
I mean, really, the only time I've ever really played him was last year. I played him the second time we played him this year. I think I probably played 16 minutes or something like that. I was just coming back from injury. You know, you got to take your hat off to him. Regardless of this game, you still have to take your hat off to him, even before this game, of what he's been able to accomplish this year. You know, he's become a guy. And so, you know, he put a lot of work in to get there. And I respect that. But like I said, I got to take him out of this series, and that's on me.
And with that in mind, hearing him say that and hearing Steve Kerr, the head coach of the Warriors, call Draymond at times a wrecking ball, what do you expect out of Draymond in game two?
I think Pascal Siakam is going to get intimately familiar with Draymond Green.
I'm here for that, by the way.
He's going to feel more contact. I think, look, with Siakam, he's a guy that we know the kind of year that he had, and I think the second half of the year he was absolutely an all-star caliber player. You know, he can be inconsistent at times in the postseason offensively, and I think for me the games when I watch him and he looks – like you could take him out a little bit is when you get into his body and he takes some off-balance shots because you're hitting him before he gets momentum to the rim, because he is long, and when he comes at you and he's got a little bit of a Euro step in his game, sometimes he gets in those gaps up the floor. If you're not hitting him out on the floor, and look, Draymond Green is going to have to hope that he gets away with some of that. He doesn't get put into foul trouble, but you can't allow him to have that kind of rhythm where he's taking comfortable shots for him. He was sensational last night, but I think the Warriors maybe didn't give him enough priority. You could tell how much attention they were going to give Kawhi Leonard right from the very first trip up the floor. I was like, okay, they're going to treat this like a guy that they got to run and blitz at all times. I don't feel like they really treated Siakam with that level of priority on their whiteboard in their locker room. That's going to change. His name's going to be in all caps for game two because that's the other guy now that they've got to try to limit. You're going to live giving up maybe some more open threes, but you've got to do something to make Pascal Siakam less efficient than he was.
Tim Legler with us in studio here on Golic and Wingo. And I give Toronto's guys a lot of credit, that supporting cast for Kawhi, because at times that was Kyle Lowry who stepped up big in the Eastern Conference Finals series for them at different junctures. So finding points for them in those other spots. But you mentioned defensively, part of that, the luxury for Golden State is you've got guys like Andre Iguodala and Klay Thompson that can switch on the perimeter and do all that. So on the injury front, obviously, Boogie coming back, getting some minutes last night. We're still waiting on KD, but is there any concern about seeing Iguodala come up lame a little bit last night, limping towards the end of that game?
Yeah, it was kind of strange because it looked really bad initially because of his reaction. You know, that was a typical reaction of a guy that hurts the same thing that he's dealt with and he thought it was gone, right? We've all been in that boat as an athlete where you go, oh my God, because you're like, I'm going to deal with this again.
Yeah, that was his reaction. You can see it.
That's what he looked like. Slapped his hands. You could see the look on his face. But then when they took him out of the game, I was kind of watching him and he wasn't really limping down at the end of the bench, and he wasn't limping when we watched him walk off the floor. I mean, that doesn't tell you everything, but I thought that was a pretty good sign, so I'm not too concerned. They didn't seem too concerned. They'll have an update at some point today. But, yeah, look, they're thinner than they've been in the past, but their bench has been unbelievable with what they have done. They weren't able to really replicate that last night. Curry had a pretty normal stat line for him. Klay did his thing. They didn't get those kind of games from other people. Toronto's focused on taking two guys and making them a little bit less efficient, particularly until Durant comes back. They were effective in doing that last night. There will be, they have obviously a counter, and I think the counter is going to be in their energy level. I did not think Golden State was close to the energy level of Toronto Raptors last night, which is surprising for what they're trying to accomplish.
We're talking to ESPN NBA analyst Tim Legler in studio on Golic and Wingo. You mentioned earlier the gap, the rest for Golden State simulating transition defense. There's still a gap here, though. There's an extra day, basically, between games. So how long does it take with that extra timing of the finals to actually get into full rhythm for a team?
Yeah, look, that'll be a little bit better game to game. I think the thing that you can't replicate that was glaring at them as soon as the game started, okay, like you're going through practice, and you're talking about your defensive assignments on Kawhi, Siakam. Well, the guys that they're simulating in practice are not Kawhi Leonard and Pascal Siakam, right? So McKinney, as much as you want him to be Kawhi Leonard in practice, it's not going to feel the same as Kawhi Leonard's shoulder hitting you in the sternum and Pascal Siakam's speed with what you think you're walking through and trying to guard in practice. That, to me, is a much quicker adjustment, and that's what they're going to be more ready for in game two.
What are guys doing over the next 48 hours then before game two?
Still, at this point, you're trying to just get as much rest, feel fresh at the start of the game. You're getting rhythm on your shooting more than anything, and they're going to go through some walkthrough situations with whatever they felt like they didn't do well in their half-court execution. You walk through it, you clean it up, you tighten it up. I didn't think Golden State was terrible in their half-court defense last night. Their transition defense was horrid. I mean, it was like a team that you'd expect to see in the lottery, not a team like Golden State going for the fourth title in 5 years and playing in the NBA Finals. They just didn't look in sync at all, and they didn't look ready for how confidently Toronto was coming at them. That's something that's going to be glaring at them when they watch tape.
Yeah, we've seen, as Tim Legler's with us in studio, we've seen this from Golden State throughout the regular season. Not a lot in the postseason, but throughout the regular season, that at times it felt like they were just going through the motions. Let us get to where we need to go. You know, sometimes a quarterback always says in football, I like to get hit once. Oh, I'm in the game now. Is it feel like Golden State's like, okay, I get it. We're going to have to do better now. Is it helpful to them that, for lack of a better term, they got punched in the mouth?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what happened, and I think you're going to notice immediately how much faster everything looks in the part of Golden State in game two. Everything. Even offensively. I think there's probably a mentality with them that, yeah, okay, early, you know, they were getting these hard shows out on the ball screens, and they were moving the ball around. They weren't making Toronto pay for it. And they're probably thinking, as the game's going on, it's a matter of time.
Right.
They're going to make some mistakes on some of these, and now Curry and Klay get open looks, or they get those slips for guys that are setting the screen because there's so much attention. And when that happens, the other team looks a little bit helpless. And Golden State always gets one of those runs in a game where the other team looks confused, helpless, and they start to get dejected. They never got to that, and I think you're going to see the pace of their offense pick up, and certainly much, much better defensively, getting back in sprinter mode, matching up with guys and making Toronto play against your half-court defense. And I think Golden State has personnel that matches up pretty well defensively with Toronto. If they can get them to play a half-court game, I think they're going to be in pretty good shape.
Legs, want to get your opinion on some of the stuff going on with the Rockets in just a second, but I guess being human beings in all of this and the Warriors maybe being surprised by just how confident Toronto, the first time on the stage going out there and competing like they had been the Cavs going up against them for the last 4 years in this, does any of this affect the timeline for Kevin Durant? Maybe a little more urgency around the idea of game three being that point where he re-enters the lineup, just because you see, all right, this is a series where you're going to need every bit.
I personally think you're at the stage when you're in the NBA Finals and the thought of not finishing the deal here and getting their fourth title and third in a row, I think the thought of that means if you're ready to go, you're playing, period. I don't care if they're up 2-0, it's a split, you're down 2-0. If he's ready to play physically where he says, I'm actually at the point now where I'm confident I can go out there and not think about this at all. I can make every cut, jump, change of direction. I can land. I can backpedal. I can do everything I need to without thinking about this. If he's at that point in game three, he's going to play. No matter if they're down 2-0 or if they were to have been up 2-0, I don't think it matters, man. You're trying to finish off the deal, and it's Kevin Durant. He's going to be on the court as soon as he tells them, I'm good, man. I'm physically good. I've done everything. And if, even though it's a simulated thing, you're going as hard as you can. And almost in some ways trying to see if you can, you know, almost trick it, make it hurt again. And if you don't feel that, you're going to be on the court for game three. So I don't think that's going to really expedite the process for them at all.
We're talking to ESPN NBA analyst Tim Legler. The other story in the NBA today, obviously, is around the Rockets. We heard earlier in the week that James Harden is not available likely, but it's possible the rest of the roster is. Now we get word that Mike D'Antoni has broken off contract extension talks with the team. What should the Rockets do moving forward?
Yeah, I thought it was actually kind of hilarious when they said, listen, Chris Paul's available. At 3 years, $125 million. Who's in, guys? It's like
Ukraine.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you know, come on, you got to be kidding me. Yeah, that's almost an impossible contract to move. But I think with a bigger message here is this isn't good enough, and you've got new ownership. I think that's what it comes down to, and I think the new ownership was very vocal, which you don't typically see at the end of a season. You know, use the word like unacceptable end of your season. It's a new ownership. It's like when a new athletic director comes in. And you're the head coach. Not a good time to have a disappointing end of your year when there's a new AD in town. And that's kind of how it feels in Houston. They're going to look at everything. So to say guys are available, that's nice. To actually get it done in terms of moving a contract like Chris Paul's, I just don't see how that's possible. If he had 1 year and 40-something million, okay, yeah, somebody takes on the expiring deal. Not 3 years of that. No. And obviously James Harden, you know, I don't think you're moving him either. The whole identity as a franchise is wrapped around that guy. So I think you're going to see those two guys stay. But I think they're open to changing the way that they play. I think it's a lot harder to do with James Harden now being comfortable playing this way, because you're going to have to get him to move without the ball to change your style. I don't know he's willing to do that.
Yeah, and again, as frustrating as it might be, the best thing for them to do is maybe stand pat and see what happens with Golden State, because they could be a completely different team next year depending on a couple of moves.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the first thing I thought of when I heard that was, hey, you don't know what this is going to look like, the landscape in the Western Conference.
Right.
Let's just see what happens. You can always make these adjustments later, but to come out and almost make it seem like it's a fire sale going on in Houston, I thought was a little bit strange.
Yeah, patience, as frustrating as that may be, might be the best play for a team that has come so close a couple of times to taking down Golden State. Legs, always a pleasure. Don't be a stranger.
Whatever you need, gentlemen. I'll
perpetually tan, by the way.
You got it.
Yeah, that is true.
A couple days off, man. Help me over Memorial Day weekend. Believe me.
Good for you. Refreshed.